Good afternoon, everyone. It's been almost a year since the Securities and Exchange Commission called for a new system of strong, independent, private sector oversight of public accountants. I was pleased that that idea was embodied in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which directed the formation of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. And I'm pleased to be able to welcome the board to the commission as we host its first formal meeting. Of course, don't take this the wrong way, but we hope you'll have your own digs to conduct your own meetings, but it's not because we're not happy to have you here. I especially want to extend a warm welcome to Charlie Niemeyer to his first meeting as acting chair. Charlie, as I said when you were first appointed, we hated to lose you as chief accountant of our own enforcement division, where you finished with a record year of financial fraud cases, but we knew that your dedication would make you an asset to the board. This first formal meeting is indeed an historic occasion. While there is still a lot of work ahead for both the board and the commission, I'm confident that the board will address the important issues it faces with wisdom and expedition. The Commission looks forward to having a new partner to assist it in the regulation of the accounting profession, and we stand ready to assist you in any way possible. So thank you to each and all of you for both being willing to take on this public service and also for giving us the opportunity to welcome you. And now, Charlie, I turn it over to you.
Chairman Pitt, thank you so much for hosting this for us. It was an honor to serve under your leadership. And on behalf of the board, thank you for allowing us to have this meeting here. You know, there's probably not a more fitting place than within the walls of this agency in order to have the birth of this organization. Welcome to everyone that's here. There are those rare occasions where the sheer momentum of the event far exceeds the otherwise significance of what would happen. Today represents such an occasion. It's the beginning of a new era. It marks America's reaffirmation of its belief in its financial system, its market, and its way of life. It's my honor to be here today with the other members of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. Dan Gelzer, both an attorney and an accountant, former general counsel of the SEC, he brings with him a great depth of experience and knowledge. Kayla Gillen. Kayla is former general counsel of CalPERS, an organization well known for its vigilant efforts to improve corporate governance and to protect the interests of shareholders, even before it was popular to do so. Bill Gradison holds an MBA and a doctorate from Harvard Business School. He's already faithfully served the public for many years in several capacities, including 18 years as a congressman from the great state of Ohio. It has been quite a path to get here. There's many to thank for the great privilege we have to bring this organization to life and helping us to prepare for our mission. In that regard, the board would like to acknowledge the Congress, the members and its staff, the SEC, the commissioners, and the various groups within the SEC, the Office of the Chief Accountant, the General Counsel's Office, the Office of the Executive Director, and others that were helpful to us. We also want to thank the staff of OMB and Treasury for their support in helping us to establish funding. There are also others that have helped us to get here today. We'd like to recognize some of them actually in attendance. Korn Ferry, Trammell Crow, Tate and Tryon, and Mercer. With that, if members of the board have personal statements, I'll turn it over to you. Dan?
Thank you. As Chairman Pitt and Chairman Niemeyer have already acknowledged, this is a historic occasion. This is the first meeting of a board that will, I believe, become a permanent and important component of the financial reporting and public disclosure mechanism under our federal securities laws. Years from now, our successors will be looking at photos of today's meeting, puzzling over exactly who the people are in the picture and what we were thinking here today. As the agenda for this meeting indicates, and as the discussion will show, While this is our first formal meeting, we've already been quite busy putting some of the building blocks for our new organization in place. When the members of the board were appointed back in October, I doubt that much thought was given to our possible expertise, or lack thereof, with regard to such matters as leasing office space, negotiating with a telephone company, or preparing the budget for office supplies. Yet, in order for a brand new organization like our board to discharge its functions, these kinds of basic issues have had to be addressed, and addressed in some cases by the board members themselves. Of course, in areas like leasing, recruiting, registration infrastructure, and others, we've been fortunate to have the assistance of a number of very talented outside individuals and groups. Chairman Niemeyer has already acknowledged some of those here, and we'll be having discussion with others. But I'd like to add my thanks to all of them also. I would just add that, having had the opportunity to work with my colleagues, Charlie, Kayla, and Bill, over the last 2 months, I'm confident that all of us are very well aware of the heavy and important public responsibilities that Congress imposed on the board in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, and that the Securities and Exchange Commission imposed on us when it appointed us as the initial members of the board. While the things we're going to talk about today relate more to administration and resources than to policy, everything we're putting in place is intended to help us do the job of restoring public trust and confidence in the auditing profession, and therefore in our nation's financial reporting system that Congress laid out in the Act. There are certainly some tremendous challenges facing us, but I think we're off to a good start. Thank you.
Ms. Gillen.
Thank you. Although I've lived most of my life in California and now I'm relocating to D.C., I am from Kansas. And in Kansas, they teach you to keep it short and sweet. So I will do that and simply say that I am both humbled and honored to have been appointed to this post. It's a service that I will take very seriously. I have come in a very short period of time to both respect and truly and genuinely like my fellow board members, and I'm excited about the opportunity to work with them, and hopefully perhaps my contribution to the board could be to help assure that America's investors feel a little bit more represented in some of these decision making. I would like to also introduce someone who I will rely on quite heavily, my colleague Don Marlay, who has agreed to join us on this great journey. And I invite and urge all those who are interested in the work of this board to please understand that we all want to hear from you. We all want help and assistance and input and guidance and opinions and everything else that you can offer us. And I know all of my colleagues would truly appreciate being called upon, and I specifically ask you to invite you to call me, email me, or call Don. I have much to learn in this job, and I'm looking to many people to help me learn it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Bradison.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too want to take this opportunity to introduce to those of you who are present, Ron Boster, who is joining me in this adventure. Ron was my chief of staff up until I last left the public service to re-enter the private sector 10 years ago, and I'm just delighted that we're able to be working together again. Mr. Chairman, up until now, as you know, our efforts have been focused on budget, staff, and space, which is understandable for a startup organization. And these administrative matters will continue to require our close attention. But we now can begin to shift our focus to the substance of our work. In its own words, Congress created this board, and I quote, to oversee the audit of public companies that are subject to the securities laws in order to protect the interest of investors and further the public interest in the preparation of informative, accurate, and independent audit reports for companies the securities of which are sold to and held by and for public investors, close quote. Clearly, the Congress concluded that there was a need for a new regulatory agency independent of the accounting industry. The previous peer review system, where audit firms reviewed other audit firms, was at best ineffective and at worst a failure. Having divided my time over the years between the public and private sectors, I'm convinced that actions by both the public and private sectors are essential if investor confidence is to be restored and if our capital markets are to operate efficiently. I approach my role as a, pardon the term, card-carrying reformer, and the reason for that is simply that I'm convinced that reform is needed. What is our task? Bottom line, it is to audit the auditors. To a large extent, this involves the development of a new profession, one separate from the public company auditing firms and intended to provide oversight over their activities. From this, I draw two conclusions. First, with regard to auditing standards, I have an open mind and believe we should start with a blank slate and that we should solicit views widely with the goal of developing standards, our standards, this board's standards, which may or may not bear a resemblance to those which exist today. As a corollary, I believe that inspections should be carried out by our own full-time staff, possibly supplemented by contracts with independent entities. I stress the word independent. That is, we should in no case contract with firms which audit the books of public companies. While some pundits describe this as a star-crossed agency, I don't see it that way. If anything, our rocky beginnings have brought the board together. We've operated in a collegial manner, dividing up the work, but all sharing in the decision-making process. There's a spirit among those at this table which makes me confident not only that the board will meet its statutory deadlines, but also will be able to achieve its mission as spelled out by the Congress. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Grattison. Charlie, just before we go forward, I neglected to acknowledge Phoebe Brown, who's also with us today, that was agreed to join me in this enterprise.
I understand that someone from the SEC staff may want to make a statement. The chair recognizes Jackson Day, acting chief accountant of the SEC.
Thank you, Charlie. As the SEC staff's principal point of contact with the Oversight Board, I would like to add to the chairman's remarks regarding the commitment of the Office of the Chief Accountant to work with you to restore confidence in the auditors of the financial statements of public companies. Everyone should expect that we will share the same destination, a renewed and proven faith in the audit process and in the financial reports that fuel our nation's securities markets. This is an important day for investors. It is only the first step of that journey, but it is a big step. As the public will soon see, you have not been idle the past few months. You have met with consultants, documented ideas, begun to outline an organization, and you are now ready to move forward with all deliberate speed. Rather than delay your meeting any longer, Charlie, let me simply say that we look forward to a long and productive relationship. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, I will call to order the first formal meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. First item on the agenda, proposed bylaws. Ms. Gillen.
Yes, thank you. Beginning very soon after each of us was appointed to this position, we began to meet to develop what we believe is the foundational governance document for this organization itself. We've worked very collaboratively and reached consensus on a document that will be distributed at the end of this meeting, I understand. And at this point, I will move the adoption of the bylaws of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, a nonprofit membership corporation, as those were drafted in final revision earlier today.
Do we have a second?
Second.
At this point, I would also like to move to amend the bylaws as they have been presented. Section 9.3 of the bylaws provides for the retention of an independent auditor. It currently reads as follows. The governing board shall retain an accounting firm to annually audit the corporation's financial records, which firm shall not perform any other services except tax services for the corporation. My motion to amend would be to add a final sentence, which would read as follows. The governing board may not retain any particular accounting firm for auditing services for more than a period of 5 consecutive years. And if I could have a second, I would like to discuss the motion.
I second that proposal.
Discussion?
Thank you. I make this motion for one purpose only, and that is that as a nonprofit corporation with a financial structure that I think we all recognize will be very straightforward and simple, I believe that it's in the best interest of this organization on a long-term basis for our independent auditor to be mandatorily rotated at least every 5 years. I think without meaning or intending in any way to predispose the discussion of this issue that I know that is ongoing with regard to public companies, I think for us the answer is quite simple, and that this is basic good governance. I think that to mandatorily rotate our auditors is the best way to ensure that our financial structures and our internal checks and controls are as flawless as is humanly possible. I also understand and expect that the public, and particularly public investors, are looking to many organizations, including this board, to emulate good governance principles. And for that reason, I urge adoption of the motion.
Any other discussion? Other members? I'd like to make a statement then. I think that, so before us now, we have a motion to amend the bylaws. Before we vote on the bylaws. At this point, I think that the whether or not to rotate auditors and put that in our bylaws is something that I guess I don't feel comfortable doing at this point in time, in that Congress had the choice of putting that in the law for public companies in Sarbanes-Oxley and decided instead to ask GAO to study the issue. That being the case, and considering the fact that it would be 5 years before we would have to rotate, even if we had such a provision in our bylaws, I would suggest that we, I'm not sure that this is the time to do it.
I have some sympathy for what Cale has suggested, but fundamentally I agree with you at this point in time, Mr. Chairman. So I would like to move that we defer consideration of the motion to amend our bylaws until the Comptroller General completes the study that Section 207 of the Act requires him to undertake with respect to the rotation of auditing firms. And I would stress that I'm suggesting deferral, not tabling, because I think we should consider this issue after the GAO has rendered its report.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I am comforted by the fact that Mr. Gelzer has, and the chair has also recognized that this is an issue that we should consider in sympathy for the issue of timing. I will second the motion to defer.
Okay. Voting on it, I would also vote to defer. Mr. Gradisson?
Aye.
Motion passes. We have before us still the motion to adopt bylaws. We have a second. So voting, I'm in favor.
I'm in favor.
I vote aye.
Aye.
Very good. Motion passes. Item number two, the interim chief administrative officer, Mr. Gradisson, you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to not only to introduce to those who are present our interim chief administrative officer, but I want to use this as just an opportunity to give a little sense as to the process which we followed here and the process we will be following as we fill other senior positions. With the help of Corn Ferry, we looked to them initially to review a number of applications, some of which had come to us direct, some of which had come to them, others were people that they knew from their broad international experience. And through that process, the number was narrowed down to several highly qualified candidates whom we interviewed. And from that process, out of that process, we were really delighted to be able to bring on board, starting today, Paul Schneider, as the interim chief administrative officer. At one point, we thought we could go right into the process of picking a permanent person for this position, but it became clear that time was so pressing and there were so many things that needed doing that the interim spot made very good sense. And by interim, we were talking about 90 days. Paul came to us highly recommended with a long record of achievement. The phrase that stuck in my mind about him that was given to us was that he was a complex problem solver, which I think means a solver of complex problems, actually. But he had a truly remarkable record during his years with the Acacia Group, which used to be located over here near the Capitol and is now out in Bethesda. He was Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Officer, and Chief Investment Officer. So with that background, I just want to acknowledge the presence and invite the comments of Paul Schneider, our new Interim Chief Administrative Officer. Paul?
Thank you, Mr. Grandison, and board members. Very quickly, let me just say I'm truly excited and honored to be working with the board, both the members and the staff, and I think this is going to be a fun and high-intensity 90 days. We expect to get a lot done and to move everything forward. So I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Mr. Grandison. Mr. Schneider, thank you for joining us so quickly. Item number three, report regarding the design of the board's registration process. Mr. Gelzer.
Thank you. Well, one of the most fundamental building blocks of the regulatory system that Congress envisioned for the board in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act is a process for the registration of the auditing firms and their associated persons that audit the financial statements of public companies. That system really has to be in place before we can begin to discharge many of our other regulatory responsibilities, because those other provisions of the Act depend on firms being registered before they're inspected, for example, or subject to our disciplinary processes. The National Association of Securities Dealers has extensive experience with registration, both because of its own system for the registration of broker-dealers and because it's lent its expertise to some other organizations in the past. And for that reason, a month or so ago, we asked the NASD if there are ways in which it could be helpful to us in structuring our registration process, particularly with a view to having a web-based automated registration system, at least ultimately. We're fortunate today that Bob Glauber, the chairman of the NASD, and Doug Shulman, the president, are here with us, and I'd like to ask you gentlemen if you could give a report on how you might be able to help the board.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Gelzer and Mr. Chairman, members of the board. We are, of course, very pleased to be here to respond to the PCAOB's request that we discuss NASD's experience, particularly as it relates to the registration process for firms and their professionals. In addition to Doug Shulman, I'm accompanied by Derek Linden, who is our Senior Vice President in charge of registration and disclosure. It's clear that the board has a very aggressive timetable for key administrative and infrastructure decisions. As I understand it, you have to begin the registration process by April of this year. You have to have a fully functioning system for a group which contains 800 firms and probably 125,000 professional people by October of this year. Indeed, as Mr. Gelzer, you suggested, the board asked us to describe the activities of NASD at your first organizational meeting back in November, which struck us as sensible because we look like you. We are a private sector regulator empowered to serve the public interest. We have provided assistance on the registration process with a similar organization. It's fitting that we should be here at the SEC. The SEC asked us to help them with the registration of investment advisors when that was mandated by Congress that they do that. And, of course, they, like you and like us, share the common interest of supporting investor confidence and market integrity. We have, indeed, extensive experience in building and operating registration systems. We believe that can be helpful to the PCAOB in meeting its statutory obligation and doing so according to what is a most aggressive timetable. With that introduction, let me introduce Doug Shulman, who can describe in a bit more detail our activities and our understanding of your needs.
Thank you very much, and thanks again for having us here. just to share a little information about the importance of registration and then give you a few details about our the system that we'd be honored to help you set up. Our finding and our belief is that in an information-intensive industry, which the industry we regulate, the financial services industry, as well as the accounting industry, that one of the key and the core backbones of the regulation process is having in place a system that gets information in on the front end, can analyze that information, and then can report that information out both to external agencies but also internally to the staff of the regulator who needs to act on that information. Some of the key pieces of an effective system which does just that is having information that comes in, the right information, which obviously is the decision about what is right is the board's decision, having that right information come in, have it in a granular detail that can be sorted easily and that can trigger events that might mean that there should be an inquiry of that company. Second, that information, once you use it just to register and flag early events, is going to be used to feed your investigation and your enforcement actions. And so in designing the system in the early end, getting the information that you're going to need later in the pipeline and in the process is important. The system should have tools to flag information. So someone who has a past lawsuit against them, who's lost something, who has a disciplinary record, flag that so it can then get in a human's hands to act on and make decisions on. And finally, that system, I think in your case, similar to ours, is going to have to report information out to Congress, to the SEC, and very importantly, to the investing public. A well-designed system can also decrease costs. I mean, said simply, if you can automate a lot of the process, so a lot of the rote processing, sorting, and flagging of information can happen in technology, you save your staff to do the more value-added work. Before I go a little further and tell you a few details of the system, let me make it very clear to you all in a public setting, which we've made clear privately over and over, that NASD is happy to do this for you, but has no interest, and I know you have no interest, in making any regulatory decisions. That what we're talking about is setting up a system that you would design and determine what it did. We would be available to make our people available to advise, to talk about the lessons we've learned, the pitfalls, etc. But this is clearly just building the system. A few more details about what a system would do and the important functions and the proposal that we've given you would do. First is it would be internet-based and it would have a mechanism to bring the information in on the front end. Second, there'd be workflow management, which would arrange the information that order went through and make sure it got on the right desks of the right people and got fed out to your other systems over time as you develop it. Third is on an annual basis and on a regular basis, it would have the ability for firms to go in and update the information, either update new information, change of personnel, or recertify that the existing information is there and correct. Have the ability to, both on an ad hoc basis, you all want to know a list of firms that have X attribute to set up reports, but it also would have regular reporting as you determine as you went forward. It would be able to take whatever information came in and is being used by the staff to also then feed that information, as I talked about before, into the public or into into Congress, to the SEC, whoever you want to report to. And finally, over time, if the need arises, to be able to share and funnel that information to other regulatory bodies that need the information. In our case, we register all the individuals in the securities industry for the states as well and feed that to the states. Over time, you all will decide, you know, exactly who else needs to have this information. What we can do is, to help you get up and running quickly, is first make available our software, our hardware, our network, our data center, so that you don't have to spend time doing that. Second, we have a call center. Our people wouldn't answer any questions about accounting rules or policy, but they'd answer questions like, I can't log on to the system and get my information in, and it's April, and they're looking for it, and somebody's just got to be there to answer the phone and get the processing through. Make available our you know, we have staff now that holds up and does the maintenance and feeds the servers and does the upgrades for the system we do for the investment advisor industry, the system we do for our own regulation of brokers, and that staff would be made available to you. And finally, our people, who we have over 200 professionals who do this every day. We've learned a lot of lessons. 20 years ago, we started moving from a manual to an automated system. We made plenty of mistakes, and hopefully those people and their intellectual property and expertise could be made available to you to answer questions as you're making decisions along the process. What we've proposed, it's an aggressive timeline to get information in, but we believe, and you all are well aware, that if you act quickly, this can be done to meet your statutory guideline. We proposed a three-phased approach. Phase one would be getting the basic information in with a simple database program that wouldn't be robust enough to do all the sorting and capabilities that you'd want in the long term, but would get people in the door. At the same time, we'd be building phase two for you. 100% of the data that went into phase one and 80% of the code that was used to build year one would be put into phase two. Phase one would be done at the end of April, so it would meet the statutory deadline. Phase two would be done by the end of this year, and you'd have the robust system ready to go. With that, all I'd say is reemphasize the need for quickness, which all four of you have emphasized to us, and we'd second that, and because we're all in the business of making the market safe for investors, we'd be honored to do this for you.
Thank you. I mean, you stress, and I guess I'll just repeat it, that of course the content and the way decisions were made about the information would have to be a responsibility on our side, not on yours. You would be providing us with the infrastructure or the tools to make those decisions.
That's entirely correct, as indeed is the relationship between us and the SEC.
Maybe just a little bit, a bit along that line. Do you have experience, or what do you see as the complexities in designing a system that can be modified over time? In other words, I'm not confident that at the end of April, well, I'll put it differently, after we have a year or two of experience, we may know more than we will at the end of April about what information we need to make registration decision. So we need some flexibility, I think, in our system.
Yeah, our system right now has all the state rules, the federal rules, the rules of the New York Stock Exchange, and the rules of the NASD. And we put out three releases a year that changes the information that comes in, the form that broker-dealers and individuals use change. I think the key to it is setting up a system, this is what we would do, that has flexibility. You can change the front end. It has a basic database that you could add fields as you learn over time. And then it has a separate function that allows you to pull it out and sort it. So each of those would be isolated is the way it would be architected, which makes it very flexible, very easy to change. And we would anticipate, it would be very surprised if you didn't each year change it for several years, because as you get more information, you understand what's important to look at and what's not.
And, others may have questions. I would just ask one other thing. Nothing seems to come free in this life. Can you comment at least generally on what the cost impact of this would be on us, or how cost would be determined?
Yeah, the way we would determine our costs is we're a nonprofit like yourself, so we don't look to make money on these things. We'd determine our costs. It would be cost-based plus 10%, so we had plenty of room to have people spend time on it. And then a licensing fee for just our basic technology that we'd be providing. The range of these is under $10 million to get it up and running, several million annually to run it. I would emphasize, though, a lot of it would be in the hands of the board. It just depends how much information you want to get, what you want to be able to do with it, who you want to share the information with.
The only other point I would add is that the approach that we would take would be consistent with the approach we've taken with the SEC, as we've acted in very much the same capacity for them in the investment advisor registration process.
Ms. Gillen.
Thank you. I'm very intrigued with this concept, and I want to thank you both for coming forward and offering your ideas and offer for assistance. Do you envision a relationship that has to, in order for you to sort of make yourselves whole, has to be at least a minimum duration in time?
Yeah, we've proposed 5 years just because for us to invest the time and divert our resources, and build this thing and build out the infrastructure to run it and do the system the first time, that's what makes it worthwhile. So we had proposed that we have a 5-year relationship. Obviously, we're very happy to talk. I mean, the main reason we're doing this is because we think it would get you assist you in getting up and running quickly, which we think is in the interest of the public.
Mr. Credison.
Mr. Chairman, you had mentioned, I think, Doug, in one of our earlier meetings that you were moving in the direction of, I'm not sure I have the exact phrase, but sort of a risk-based approach, trying to identify higher-risk situations. Certainly something we'll want to do in time. I'm not sure how quickly we can move, and that's really why I bring it up. Do you have any thoughts as to how much in the first series of registrations that we'd be able to build in that would attempt to identify those situations I could speculate on what the criteria might be, but would that be possible to do in the first round, or is that more a second phase thing, in your judgment?
I think it's by the end of this year you'd be able to use it to flag information. I mean, you could flag in the first round basic things. Is there a disciplinary history?
Yeah.
Just to be clear, what we were referring to at the other was saying over time, and you all may want to build, there's a program we built that we're quite proud of for our member regulation ongoing exam program, which we call Insight, which basically takes a firm, their activities of this year, compares it to their peer group, and compares it to their activities over the last few years. And so if there's a dramatic surge in sales calls, if there's a dramatic surge in registered reps, we know that's something you might want to look at because it could be higher risk with those people being deployed, which is something that, philosophically we want to move to, which is to spend most of our resources on the higher risk firms that we regulate.
Well, if just a hypothetical, if we had reason to speculate that certain public companies or public companies in certain industries perhaps carry greater risk of problems along the lines of our responsibilities, would it be possible in the first round to have the auditing firms code their clients, say by the CIPIC codes, so that we would have a way to sort out those that we might want to look at or our inspectors might want to look at that were in a particular one of those classifications?
Yeah. I mean, if it was that simple, which was, if put an industry, who are the firms you regulate is one of your questions on your, or who are the firms that you do audits of, what are the public companies, what industry are you in, and they could flag anyone who says these industries, they audit companies in that industry, put it out to a separate pile that your auditors go into first.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I do not have any questions, but I just want to comment, and that is we recognize that NESD has its own organization to run and many other things to do than to concern itself with us, and we are most appreciative that the NESD would consider helping us in this way, and it certainly certainly indicates the NESD's commitment to helping the markets and helping shareholders.
Well, thank you very much. And just very simply, I think we share parallel public responsibilities. And so we're most happy to be of whatever service we can be.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we go to agenda item number 4, a bit of housekeeping. We now have bylaws. With that, I would move that we designate Ron Bostert to be our secretary for purposes of this meeting. Do you have a second?
Second.
Very good. Mr. Bosser, would you keep the minutes, please? Thank you, sir. Agenda item number 4, a report concerning senior staff recruiting. Ms. Gillen.
Yes, thank you. Among one of the other many administrative tasks that we tackled as soon as we became appointed to this board was the identification of the need to quickly hire our top-level staff. and we decided immediately that we wanted to use the services of an executive search firm and to be to use a process across the board that was systematic and could ensure that we are indeed looking for the best and brightest talent that's willing to serve in this capacity. We used a very focused search to select Korn Ferry, and representatives from the Korn Ferry team are here today. I'd like to introduce Cindy Cotman and Hypatia Kingsley, who've been wonderful assistants, and I think they worked, I know they worked on Christmas, and I thank them for all of their efforts, and they've been working very, very hard. And I would like to ask you, Cindy and Hypatia, if you could describe for both us and for the audience the positions that we've asked you to recruit for, general description of the duties and qualifications that we've outlined for each of these positions, the salary range that we've initially outlined for them, and your comments, if any, on how those salary ranges are either attracting or not attracting candidates at this point.
Thank you, Kayla, and thank you, the board.
If you could move the mic a little closer to you.
As Kayla said, after a competitive proposal process, Korn Ferry is honored to be retained by the board to help them build out their senior management team. Given our recent recruitment experience in regulatory affairs, which we have a specialty practice in, and our extensive database of contacts and strong project management capabilities, we have already been able to quickly launch 7 executive search positions simultaneously, as well as identify and work with the board to identify Paul Schneider for the interim CAO. My colleague Hypatia will take you through the positions that we're searching for in detail.
Thank you, Cindy. And again, it is an honor for Korn Ferry to be involved in this process. Thank you very much to the board. As part of our efforts on the board's behalf, we have jointly created a website for interested individuals regarding these positions. That website is located at www.pcaob.cornferry.com, and it allows, again, interested individuals to view full position descriptions of each of the executive searches that are ongoing, as well as apply for those positions. As this is a public meeting, I would encourage any interested individual in this room and who can, who's going to see this broadcast, that they should take a look at the website. The positions include a chief administrative officer. This is the permanent position, which will be responsible for the day-to-day operations of the organization, including responsibility oversight for human resources, finance, IT, and back office operations in support of the board and its duties. Secondly is a general counsel, which will provide legal advice and counsel to the board as they create the agenda and policies for the organization. This individual will also have responsibility for litigation activities. Thirdly is a chief auditor position. The chief auditor will serve as the primary advisor to the board on policy and technical issues related to the auditing of public companies, including, but not necessarily limited to, auditing standards. Fourth is the Director of Registration and Inspection, an individual responsible for the board's audit firm registration program and for conducting inspections of these firms. Fifth is the Director of Enforcement and Investigation, who will be responsible for investigating violations of the board's rules and policies and for disciplinary proceedings. Sixth is the Director of External Communications, who will assist the board in formulating and implementing a successful government affairs and communications program. Seventh is the Director of Human Resources, who will assist the board in building and leading a human resources and staffing organization. Obviously, all 7 positions are considered critical hires, and we are working simultaneously on all 7 in a very comprehensive process. Finally, at the conclusion of these searches, we will also, and we have committed to offering the board full information regarding all applicants so that they can use said information to help build out other levels of the organization, and that is something that we're, again, very excited about doing. Cindy?
As Kayla said, we did work over Christmas, and we began on Monday of this week interviewing 6 to 7 candidates a day for each of the 7 roles. We are very pleased with our progress to date. We've seen some very high caliber, very highly qualified talent interested in playing a part in this organization. Furthermore, we did look at salary information, not only salary information that Korn Ferry has on our database of similar types of positions, but we also looked at those organizations that were of a similar peer group, like the NASD and other organizations, to look at the compensation ranges. And the result of that is that we feel that the board has proposed what looks to be a fair and equitable compensation range for each of these positions. So we are confident that we will be able to attract the talent that you need and that we are looking for.
Yes, Ms. Kim.
Just one follow-up question. Have you, so far in your interviews, your preliminary interviews, encountered an issue of specific concern that is perhaps inhibiting people or discouraging them from seriously considering our jobs that you might want to advise us about and we might want to deal with?
The only issue so far that we've been facing is that without a chairman, some are reluctant to give up a full-time job to join the board in the future to possibly face being let go. So that we have to raise some assurances with these individuals that they have a comfortable career with you.
Do you make it clear to them that the decisions with regard to this round of hires will be done by the four of us?
Yes.
Just to go back to a point that you commented on earlier, as I understand it, if there are people out there who are interested in working for the board but perhaps not in one of these 7 senior positions, they could still forward resumes to you as part of the database, if you will, that will be given to the senior people when they are brought on board.
That's correct. And actually, we've been involved in fielding a number of different inquiries due to the visibility of the board in the public regarding just that issue. If they can go ahead and send their information to us, regardless of whether or not they're applicants for these senior positions that are currently open. And we have encouraged individuals to do that. So just to make the record clear, they can still download or upload, if you will, their information to our system. It will be captured, and we will provide that information to the board at which time that you have a human resources officer.
Is it fair to say that there's a fairly good level of interest in working for the board? That's what we'd call a leading question.
No, there is a proprietary database already in the short amount of time that we've been working that's quite substantial. I think Paul was a little bit daunted this morning when we were talking through the volume of traffic that has been coming to our joint website.
Well, just to make the problem greater, could you repeat that website? I noticed some people here jotting it down, and I want to make sure that you got it right.
Sure, happy to. It's www.pcaob.cornferry, K-O-R-N-F as in Frank, E-R-R-Y, no space, .com.
Thank you. A little commercial there.
And I want to thank Korn Ferry, both Cindy and Apatia. I know that it's a tremendous task that you've undertaken on our behalf. It is very important that we be up and running as soon as possible, and these key positions must be filled quickly. At the same time, we want to be very pragmatic about it and make sure that we hire the right people and that we have thorough searches. And I know that you guys have jumped on this working Christmas Day and beyond, and we're most appreciative.
Thank you.
So we will move to item number 5, report concerning board headquarters office space. Mr. Gelser.
Okay, thank you. In getting the board up and running and operating, perhaps our absolutely most basic need is for office space, for place for the board and the staff to be housed and located. Early last month, Bill Gratis and I interviewed 3 real estate firms that specialize in the Washington commercial real estate market.
In a blizzard, I think.
In a blizzard, yes. I think we had 3 very good presentations. We had a rather difficult decision to make, but we did ultimately choose Trammell Crowe to be our real estate agent and to help us find space and get the initial space equipped and operating for us. As I think most people seem to be aware already, over the past weekend, we moved into new office space, or new to us office space, at 1666 K Street on the ninth floor of that building. We have leased two floors on the building, the eighth and ninth floors, which will be a total, I think, of approximately 46,000 square feet, plus some space on a lower level of the building, space with easier public access without coming through security. And we have an option on a third floor on the building, the 10th floor, that we could move into were we to exercise it in 2005. I think that Scott Leachman of Trammell Crow and his staff and crew probably also worked on Christmas. If they didn't work on Christmas, I know they worked around the clock last weekend to get us into our office space. And I'd certainly like to thank them for all their help in that effort. But Scott, I'm glad you're here today, and I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the process by which we selected the space, why we selected the space we did, and what some of the basic terms are.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure working with each of you, and we're honored to have had the opportunity to represent the board. As you know, Trammell Crow was engaged by the board to find suitable offices for their headquarters and oversee construction and relocation-related matters in this regard. One of the challenges was finding office space that could provide immediate availability while ensuring that the board maintained its leverage so that favorable below-market terms could be negotiated. We conducted a comprehensive search of suitable options with the intent of avoiding trophy-type properties and instead focusing on more value-oriented options that could meet their unique needs. We settled on 1666 K Street because of its superb location and the fact that it provided extraordinary terms and conditions that gave the board the ability to grow and the effects and the flexibility to accommodate stage occupancy of their office space. Given the fact that occupancy was required in less than 1 month, I can speak on behalf of everyone at Trammell Crow that the board did a remarkable job in working with us to address the many logistical issues that such a project entailed, including the complete design, procurement, and installation of a data and communication network, as well as furniture-related matters that had them out at their offices on Saturday morning with all the furniture there tabbed and in their office space so that they could open up for business on Monday morning. So thank you again for the opportunity.
Thank you, Scott. I think I read somewhere that Arthur Anderson once occupied the space that we're currently in. You might just clarify who we're leasing from. We're not subletting from Arthur Anderson, as I understand it.
Coincidentally, Arthur Anderson was the major tenant for years in 1666 K, and they negotiated a termination and a buyout, in effect, of their lease about 6 months ago. And so we dealt directly with the Charles E. Smith Companies, which are a prominent real estate developer and landlord in the Washington area.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Curtis.
My understanding is that you might be able to and will be assisting us if we decide to locate elsewhere beyond Washington. Specifically, there has been some expectation that to carry out the inspection function might benefit from having some presence in New York City, where I believe all four of the big four accounting firms are located, or at least most of them. Are you going to be working, you anticipate helping us on that as we get this part of the project behind us?
We do, and we're going to begin to do some preliminary work in that regard so you can get a better sense of what the best solution is in New York.
Thank you.
Let's go.
Could you describe for me just a little bit in general terms the financial terms of the lease, and perhaps, unless, of course, we're bound by confidentiality, and then just tell me so. But I would, though, like your expert recommendation or opinions to us about the reasonableness of the financial terms.
Well, typically the benchmark in Washington for comparable space would be with the law firm comparables in the area. And your terms and conditions relative to a major law firm that's just around the corner from you in that instance are $10 per square foot per year, less than the terms that they negotiated. We have always considered 1666 to be a good value, and I think it was just a timing issue where you were able to negotiate very favorable terms that avoided having increases in the sixth year of the lease, got an above-market concession package for tenant improvements. We're able to take advantage of the virtually brand new Arthur Anderson space. I think it was less than 2 years old. So everything that was put into that space, you know, there was at least 50, arguably in excess of $20 worth of improvements that are already there that you will reuse. So, if you'd like me to get into specifics about the rental rate or things like that, I don't know if Charles E. Smith would like to.
No, you gave me the kind of information I wanted. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's fair to say that based on your knowledge of the market, which I would say is fairly extensive, especially in Washington, the board negotiated a fairly good deal for itself as far as real estate.
Yeah. Now that the terms invariably they do leak out, and people are quite surprised that you were able to negotiate the terms that you negotiated. Plus the fact that you were able to negotiate an option to terminate the lease at a later date, and, you know, in the event that something came up where you'd want to relocate or for whatever reason.
Yes, sir.
Just, I said earlier, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the two floors that we'll be occupying this year are about 46,000 square feet. Could you give us a sense of, typical law firm, for example, occupancy? What number of people were likely to be able to house in that area?
Typically, you should be in the range of 300 to 325 square feet per person. So what we were counting on is in the neighborhood of 70 people per floor, perhaps 75, depending on efficiencies. As you recall, one of the reasons we took that lower level space is that they had designed an extraordinary filing facility there and back office facility, workroom facility that could enable you to use the above grade space more effectively, which could increase your headcount. So optimally, it could be anywhere up to 150 people for those two floors with the ability, and again, that's just an option, but we have that option for 2 years to take that 10th floor in the event that you did exceed your 150-person headcount.
I would just note that it seems to me, at least, that since a significant part of our staff is likely to be involved in the inspection function, and that in turn is likely to mean that they'll be traveling a lot, there may be ways that we can get more people into that space. So, for example, people sharing offices or sharing desks on the theory that they're not both going to be there at the same time because they'll be out participating in inspections.
I think those are some philosophical decisions the board is going to make in terms of the design. But if you go into systems furniture planning, for example, on some parts of the interior, you could increase that density even more.
Very good. Thank you. Let's move on to agenda item number 6, proposed cash flow funding needs. Certainly important in any organization is funding. Sarbanes-Oxley does allow for the funding of the PCAOB through fees from public companies and registration fees from accounting firms that would register with it. But to get started, it allows for an advance under Section 109. In that regard, the board is to put together a budget which would establish a cap for purposes of the advance funding. We, as not having inside personnel in the accounting department, have retained the accounting firm of Tate and Tryon. Charlie Tate is here with us today. Thank you, Charlie. Can you tell us a little bit about your firm?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the board. Yes, Tate & Tryon is a Washington, D.C. firm. We specialize or have a heavy concentration in not-for-profit organizations, currently serving just under 300, primarily national not-for-profit organizations. We do no public company audit work. And
do you have any accounting firms that are clients?
We do not.
Very good. Thank you. We've been working together, putting together a budget, if you will, certainly on a preliminary basis. We have basically done it on a cash flow basis. We've given you a number of assumptions for purposes of preparing that budget. Can we go over those assumptions?
Certainly.
For purposes of this, I think we've assumed a certain number of personnel would be in the organization. There is a salary schedule that shows 270 personnel. Of that, how many actually would be assumed to start or be employed by the organization by the end of 2003?
By the end of 2003, be approximately 200 employees by the end of 2003, starting with approximately 11 in January, depending upon how the Korn Ferry search progresses. Jumping up to, I think, 73 by the end of the first quarter, approximately 116 by the end of the second, and eventually getting up to 200 by the end of the year.
Very good. We've given you a number of proposed salaries for payment of employees. You're someone who's familiar with non-profit organizations having approximately 300 such clients. How do you think the salary ranges that we propose compare to similar size non-profit organizations?
They seem very reasonable. As a matter of fact, they're very much in line with some similar organizations such as the Financial Accounting Standards Board and many other similar organizations with a projected budget of, you know, who knows where it'll be, $50 million plus, I suppose. The numbers look very much in line with what we've seen.
Very good. Focusing on sort of the overall cost, not just salaries, based on the assumptions we've given you and what the numbers now come out to be in the cash flow funding requirement schedule, how do those amounts compare to similar size not-for-profit organizations?
Very, very much in line. Of course, when you look at a budget like this, the primary item is going to be personnel costs. And you look at the projected numbers, they're approximately 78-79% personnel costs. Again, very much in line with an organization like this. The other major costs being occupancy, 8-10%. Again, very much in line.
Very good. Open up the floor for questions, comments. Yes, Ms. Gillen.
I'll pass.
I think I have none. I know that you and Charlie have done a tremendous amount of work on this budget over the last few weeks or month, and I thank you for it.
You're welcome.
Focusing on the actual amounts, then, for the there's a number of items that we have not addressed. We've not given you so much for because we simply don't know. And for that purpose, this is a preliminary budget, and as we gather more information, we will be, adding that to it. And so not only is this subject to change, it will change. But in the near term, for the month of January, these amounts seem to be fairly close to what we have projected anyway. We believe that would be expended. The amounts that are shown here, can you just go through what would actually we show for the month of January?
Sure. The month of January shows $372,000 in personnel costs, and I'll just summarize the major items.
There you go.
The first month's prepayment of rent, the actual rent schedule, I think, is commencing in May. Is that right, Scott? So that's the first month's. It's not a deposit. It's the first month's rent. That's $167,000. Type is very small, $167,000. Coming down to total recurring expenditures, those expenditures which we would expect to be incurred each month, $685,000. And then we drop down to the second category of initial upfront non-recurring type expenditures, and there are four major categories there. They're the recruiting fees for Korn Ferry plus expenses, the public company billing system of $200,000, the information technology infrastructure of $494,000, and an estimate for furniture costs in the month of January of approximately $200,000. That category subtotals to $1,194,000 for a total expected expenditure in January of $1,879,000.
So a lot of the costs in the first month are basically the types of costs that would not be expected to recur, startup type costs.
Yes, sir.
So, based on the projected cash needs of the first month of $1.9 million, and if there's no other discussion, I hereby move that the PCOB request an advance from the Treasury via the Securities and Exchange Commission in accordance with Section 109 of Sarbanes-Oxley for approximately $1.9 million.
Second.
Very good. Motion carries. I further move that the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board set the compensation for its members in an amount equal to those received by members of the Financial Accounting Standards Board.
I'll second that motion.
Very good. Carries? No objections. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Charlie, for all your help.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, can I ask
yes,
a question?
Certainly.
I'd just like some clarification about where we go from here on the budget process.
Very good. Yes, thank you for raising that. We are to, according to Sarbanes-Oxley, we are to promptly present a budget. Since we are in the process of gathering information, I believe that we will be able to present our proposed budget at the very next open meeting, at least certainly the first open meeting in the month of February. Okay, moving on to agenda item number 7, ratification of interim actions. For purpose of getting this board started, we've had to take a number of steps. We have been quite busy. In that regard, individual members have entered into contracts and agreements that have incurred cost for purposes of getting together. There's a number of items that I would move to ratify, including entering into a lease for space at 1666K. It's basically two leases, one for the 8th and 9th floors and another for the subground level. The engagement of Tate and Tyron to serve as a tax and financial advisor and outside, basically outsourced accountants. The engagement of Trammell Crow to serve as the real estate broker. The engagement of Korn Ferry to aid in the search of the top 7 positions. The engagement of Mercer to serve as benefits and human resources consultant. And agreements with a number of vendors for purposes of establishing the basically the office space and get up and working. Reliance Net for the purchase of IT equipment and service contract for office setup and support. XO Communications as provider for telecommunications. National Furniture Brokers for the purchase of furniture. Washington Workplace also for the purchase of furniture. Office Movers for the moving of office furniture. Miller's Office Supplies for the purchase of office supplies. Capital Office Solutions for basically copier support and Filter Fresh so that we can have coffee.
The most important item.
Although this list, we believe, is relatively accurate, it may not be all-encompassing. For that purpose, the board would like to reserve the right to ratify other interim actions or agreements as necessary. Any comments or discussion?
If that's a motion, I'll second the ratification of these interim actions.
Very good. Motion carries. Basically, there are costs incurred by the individuals, board members, and staff. For that purpose, I would also move that the board members and staff be reimbursed for all reasonable business expenses incurred during the interim period, and delegate the authority to determine the reasonableness of those expenses to its interim chief administrative officer, Paul Snyder. Do you have a second?
Second. I'll second.
Very good. In the hope that we will have funds soon, we would need to open a banking account. So we have had the discussions with Bank of America at this point about opening a bank account. We believe we can do that promptly. For that purpose, I move that the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board authorize the opening of any and all bank accounts to establish the ability to collect those funds and make payments in the name of the board.
Second.
Also, since we maybe have funds that we have not spent all at once, we would want to establish an investment policy. For that purpose, we would want to be extremely conservative, taking the most conservative route possible and yet still be able to achieve some type of interest. I would move that we establish an investment policy that excess funds would be invested in U.S. Treasury, could be invested in U.S. Treasury instruments or related repurchase agreements.
Second.
Very good.
Chairman?
Yes.
I would like us just to be clear that we may need to revisit this policy at some point in the future, and I just, my approval of it is contingent on that understanding.
Very good. Understood. With that, there's no further items. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Well, we didn't just talk about it, but there was some expression, for me at least, at this point, the state wage agency.